Great. So I'm going to spend, well, first I'd like to thank my co-authors, Barbara Cade Menon and Jane Hill. Barbara's from the Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, and Jane is at the University of Vermont, where I'm from. So I'm going to spend the next few minutes talking about a method of enzyme hydrolysis that I've scaled down massively to fit in a microplate type format. And then I'm going to describe a couple of applications of this method. So the main motivating factors behind this work was to improve pea assessment. By doing this, we can improve our fertility estimates, which will aid the farmer. And we can also gain a better understanding of the eutrophication potential of a given soil. Extractable phosphorus in soil could be classified in this manner. I think you could look at it as either being molybdate reactive phosphorus or molybdate unreactive phosphorus. And what we found is that a large fraction of the molybdate unreactive phosphorus is enzyme labile phosphorus. This MUP fraction is mostly made up of organic phosphorus compounds. And a large portion of these, we're finding, can be degraded to inorganic phosphorus by microbes and plant-produced dephosphorylating enzymes. And if we can measure this enzyme labile fraction more easily, then I think that nutrient management will be enhanced by quite a bit. So currently, if we wanted to assess all the different forms of phosphorus in soil, the gold standard would be to run P31 NMR on it, and this is a spectra obtained from some forest floor samples. And this is a sodium hydroxide EDTA extracted forest floor sample. And what this spectra tells us is the various types of phosphorus that were in the sample and approximately the proportions that were in there. The types that I want to focus on in this talk are orthophosphate, which is inorganic phosphorus, orthophosphate monoesters, and orthophosphate diesters, which would include DNA and RNA. And you know, this technique is really good. It gives us a great idea of what's going on in a particular sample, but it fails to measure the labile fraction of phosphorus, and that's where I think that this enzyme hydrolysis method will be a great complement to this technique. So enzymatic hydrolysis works on the basis that certain commercially available dephosphorylating enzymes selectively hydrolyze specific types of organic phosphorus. For example, this particular enzyme hydrolyzes monoesters of phosphorus. This one would be considered a phytase and will selectively hydrolyze phytases or phytic acid, phytate. And it will also hydrolyze other simpler form monoesters of phosphorus. And then there's a third type of enzyme that we use in this study called a nuclease P1 that will hydrolyze it'll hydrolyze phosphorus diester linkages such as this sugar phosphate backbone in a DNA or RNA molecule. So the benefits of this particular method is that it does assess the composition, not to the degree that NMR does, but more importantly, it does assess the lability as well, the enzyme lability of this unreactive fraction of phosphorus. So the objectives of the study were to simply adapt an enzymatic hydrolysis method to a microplate reader format, which involved scaling down many-fold to the microliter range, so that I could process a whole bunch of samples very quickly and efficiently using pipettemens and micro centrifuge tubes and tools like that, rather than using large flasks and large test tubes and things. So after doing this, I'm going to go through how we verified this. I'm going to also show how we demonstrated some utility of this method through the application of it on one, poultry manure amended soil samples, and two, some dairy and poultry manure compost. So first, I'd like to go through the adaptation and how we verified it. So we began some trials with 13 model P compounds that were just very pure forms of various organic phosphorus molecules, and we added we added just acid phosphatase from potato, which selectively hydrolyzes phosphorus monoesters, and then we would add another cocktail of the acid phosphatase from potato in addition to an acid phosphatase from wheat germ, and this particular cocktail would hydrolyze simple monoesters and phytate. And then we had a third cocktail that included the nuclease P1 so that we could measure the amount of inorganic phosphorus that was coming from diester sources. And this is a table showing the results from that. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it, but I just wanted to point out, so what we have is we have the model compound that was tested, the class of phosphorus that it represents, and then the percent recoveries from when we applied each of the three enzyme cocktails. So quickly, we noticed that not all of the simple monoesters were hydrolyzed by acid phosphatase from potato alone, and it required the addition of the acid phosphatase from wheat germ to achieve a much larger amount of hydrolysis. Myo-inositol hexacus phosphate, we didn't see any, as expected, we really didn't see much hydrolysis from acid phosphatase from potato, but we included acid phosphatase from wheat germ. We did see a significant increase in the hydrolysis of this particular molecule. And not all sugar, like in this case sugar phosphates, were cleaved equally. The position, the particular carbon that's phosphorylated does have an effect upon how susceptible the molecule is to degradation. And that was something that has been seen in literature. And we also saw a large amount of hydrolysis of condensed phosphates, in this case NADPH, not so much from the acid phosphatase potato, but when we added the GP to it, we did see significant hydrolysis. So by going through those series of experiments and comparing back to what we've seen in literature, we were able to verify that this scaling down was, in fact, it worked. Like, we were able to reproduce what's been done, and we had a high level of accuracy in doing so. So the next step was to apply it to some actual environmental samples. And to do that, I applied it to a time series of poultry manure amended soil. And these were soil columns, which I'll describe briefly in a second, that were sampled over a period of 6 weeks. We extracted the samples with sodium hydroxide, EDTA, to maximize the amount of phosphorus that we could pull out of them. We adjusted the pH and hydrolyzed the samples with the enzyme cocktails I just described. And then we freeze-dried some of the extracts and applied P31 NMR to them to compare back to the measurements made using enzyme hydrolysis. This is a picture of one of the columns. They're about 25 centimeters wide, made out of PVC pipe, about 30 centimeters deep. We had two sampling ports, one at 5 centimeters and one at 15 centimeters. And periodically, every couple of weeks, we would pull out sample, extract it, and then we would run NMR on the sample. And I actually applied the enzymatic hydrolysis to an archive dry sample that was equivalent to this. And we also ran ICP on the extracts to determine totals that were in each of those extracts. So this table is going to shows a comparison between what we saw using enzymatic hydrolysis versus what we saw using NMR. So we have the week that was sampled, the depth that we sampled from, and then the P class that we were trying to distinguish between. So this first bit here is baseline inorganic phosphorus. This was material that in this column here is what we saw inherently in the assay that was not hydrolyzable by the enzymes, but it was in there. And because it was inherently molybdate reactive, we considered it inorganic phosphorus. And it compared well with the NMR, the proportions of the P in the samples that was inorganic based on NMR work. And likewise, in the hydrolyzable fractions, we saw a strong correlation between what was deemed labile monoester by using EH versus what was considered monoester phosphorus using NMR. And with nucleic acids, there was not very much in any of the samples, but we did see some correlation there. And the final column is just the amount of what was observed that was enzyme labile, and as you can see, it was a fairly large proportion, and this is material that would not be picked up in a traditional MRP type assay. So the conclusion that we got from this was that NMR data did correspond well with the enzymatic hydrolysis data. And as I just mentioned, we did see that a lot of the organic phosphorus that was in about 30% of the phosphorus that was in the samples was organic based on NMR work, and in this case it would not be reactive with sodium molybdate and therefore somewhat overlooked in a traditional soil assay. So that was our first application of this method, and the second one I just have been working on here recently, and that's applying it to dairy and poultry manure compost. So what I did was I sampled some aged windrows. These samples were taken down in Middlebury, Vermont. They were composed 12 parts wood chips, 12 parts cow manure, and 8 parts chicken manure. One particular windrow had been aged for a month, and the other one had been aged for 3 months. And in addition to applying enzymatic hydrolysis to the windrows, I also applied it to the starting materials and looked at the varying proportions of phosphorus molecules in those. So these samples were dried, they were sieved, and then I extracted them with sodium hydroxide, EDTA. I adjusted the pH and then hydrolyzed the samples. These enzyme cocktails are very dependent upon the pH. They don't function unless the pH is within certain bounds. This is a bird's eye view on the top of one of the windrows. They're 100 meters long, 4 meters wide, a couple meters tall, quite large. I sampled the X's mark where I sampled from the ends and then the middle and then the other end. I dug down half a meter and took samples from the interior part of the windrow where I could avoid any surface interactions that might have been taking place. And this is the data that we were able to collect. What we've got is, the amount of phosphorus that was measured and then the particular sample that was tested. These are the starting materials in the wood. We saw very little phosphorus as we somewhat expected. In the dairy manure, we measured amounts that were similar to what we had seen in literature. A small amount of monoester phosphorus was found in the dairy manure. In the poultry manure, we saw much more monoester phosphorus. This is what we had expected since poultry are monogastric and can't degrade phytate, and therefore it tends to accumulate in their manure. And then when I looked at the compost itself at T equals zero, we saw a relatively large amount of monoester phosphorus, but rapidly it disappeared. After 1 month, we couldn't measure any monoester phosphorus in these windrows, indicating that it was somehow leaving the system. And we achieved our objectives. I set out to originally just to adapt this enzymatic hydrolysis method and to really scale it down. It was really difficult to use this method, I found, using large volumes and flasks and very time-consuming. But by scaling it down, I found that I was able to retain the accuracy of the original method, but be able to process, there's 96 wells in one of these plates, so we can do a whole bunch of samples very quickly. And then after doing this, we went ahead and applied it to a couple of different systems and hope to apply it to many more in the future. Anyways, in conclusion, we were able to say that enzymatic hydrolysis, yes, it can be miniaturized. We were able to verify that it could be miniaturized by comparing it to NMR values, measurements taken from identical samples, and found them to be very comparable. We were able to find that 30% of the detectable phosphorus in soil was enzyme labile and may be overlooked by traditional molybdate reactive, traditional measurements of phosphorus in soil. And we found that the enzyme labile monoester phosphorus in manure diminishes very rapidly, and the exact mechanism for this is not really known. We could hypothesize it that microbes are producing similar enzymes that were used in this study and causing the degradation of these monoester P molecules. So I'd just like to acknowledge some folks at the University of Vermont for their help with this, Barbara Cade Menon, Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, for her support, and Robert Foster, who allowed me to sample his compost windrows, and then the funding sources. So if there's time, I'm happy to take any questions.
Are there any questions?
Yes.
So the method involves adding the enzymes in three different mixtures, well, having a control and then adding each of the three component mixtures, and then doing a molybdate color development and then reading it? Is that
exactly, happening? Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yep, and I scaled down both the incubation mixture. So we incubate the enzyme with the substrate in the microplate,
right,
and then we go ahead and add the color reagents to the microplate and determine the absorbance. And kind of a subtractive method between each enzyme cocktail to tell us how much of each.
You didn't have to deal with any solids or anything. I mean, this is reflectance, or is it passed through with the light, or are you sucking it out, or how are you reading that?
It just goes in a machine and it's read from above.
Okay.
We just measure absorbance, it's shining straight through the well.
So turbidity didn't affect you?
No. We added, in the past, when you start adding the color reagents, the enzymes have been known to precipitate out of solution, which will cause some turbidity. But you can add SDS to the solutions, and that will help prevent that. It's just a detergent that keeps things soluble. So. Yes, Jane. Yes. Everything after being extracted, we centrifuged like crazy and made sure that things were quite clean in this process.
Yeah.